Good evening, folks. I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I want to remind all of you that I will be in Atlanta, Georgia, this coming Sunday, November the 14th, at the Chambly Civic Center. At the Chambly Civic Center in Atlanta, Georgia, this Sunday, November the 14th, I'm going to be conducting about a 6 to 8 hour workshop. Anybody who attends that workshop, if they go out of there scratching their head wondering what's going on in the world, they either don't have a brain or they weren't listening. So make sure you're there, folks. For information, call 404-986-0802. That's 404-986-0802. I'll be repeating that number again later in the hour. Now, a little bit on our stock purchase, Gannett Company Incorporated, GCI, the New York Stock Exchange symbol. Our pressure is holding the stock right around $51 as the rest of the stock market fluctuates, usually down and then back up a little bit. Our pressure on this stock is holding it right at around $51. Now, there's a lot of things happening with Gannett Company Incorporated. They're starting a database service accessible by telephone where you can get the news from USA Today and other things. When I come back from Atlanta, I'm going to be catching you up with everything that this corporation's doing. This is a number one purchase. We really made a wonderful choice. The last stockholders meeting was Tuesday, May 4th, 1993. The next one will be May 3rd, 1994. By the time that stockholders meeting is held on May 3rd, 1994, I want to have in my hand 80 million proxy votes of Gannett Company Incorporated. GCI is the symbol on the New York Stock Exchange. I want all of you people out there to get busy. I want you to educate your neighbors, your organizations, your churches, anything that you belong to, the people at your work, get them involved. Get them to buy stock. Get them to send me their proxies. And you don't have to wait for us to send you a form, folks. All you got to do is fill out a power of attorney, have it notarized, authorizing me to vote all of your stock you now own or will own in the future of Gannett Company Incorporated and no other powers. And you may put on there, if you wish, that this power to vote your proxy on your stock may be rescinded simply by written notice at any time. I don't want your stock. I don't want your money. I want to help empower America. If we can educate the American people through the establishment news media that they're used to reading, the television stations they're used to seeing, and the radio shows that they're used to listening to on AM and FM, we can win this battle. We cannot win it. We cannot, ladies and gentlemen, win it any other way. If it comes to taking up arms, it will take years and years and years of fighting, a guerrilla warfare, and the outcome is uncertain, to say the least. You can listen to Bobo Gritz if you want to as he stands up and tells you that you don't have to do anything, that you don't have to prepare because it's already been written who's going to win. But don't cry to me. Don't cry to me when you see your family suffering, when you see your children hauled off to God knows where and you never see them again. You see your wife stripped naked in front of you and all of her bodily orifices searched. Don't tell me that it's already been written. I don't even want to hear it. If you're not willing to fight the battle, then get the hell off the field and let those of us who are ready and willing have a sway at it. And folks, believe me, we are fighting a war. This is a war, and I intend to win. As I've said before, if you want to go up the river with me, don't even get on this boat unless you've already made up your mind to fight the battle and that we're going to win. But not because it is written, but because we have empowered ourselves and we've fought the valiant fight and we come home with the spoils. Now, I'm talking on fighting the battle the same way that they have fought it against us, with the tools that work, with the tools that can ensure that we get this country back in a much shorter period of time than fighting a prolonged guerrilla war. Now, don't get me wrong, folks, if it comes to that, if they overtly declare martial law and begin to enslave Americans and throw the Constitution overtly into the trash can, I'll be right with everybody else fighting that guerrilla war. You can count on that. I want to sort of educate you tonight a little bit into what's happening and what's really important. I'm sure most of you out there watched the debate, if you can call it that, on television tonight. Gore lied a lot, was very well prepared, was not the wimp that everybody has claimed that he is. He did very well for himself. He made a good showing. He lied a lot. Pearl lied a little, and he looked very bad. And Gore sort of used some dirty tactics and didn't explain to the sheeple just exactly what it meant, and neither did Perot adequately explain what he was talking about. You see, folks, Perot, H. Ross Perot, is a businessman. He owes his whole fortune to the Rockefeller family when they gave him a computer contract with the state of New York with no opposing bidders in a state where there's no such thing as opposing bidders. So we know that the Rockefeller family owns H. Ross Perot. There's no doubt of that. We also know that whatever he's doing because there's an agenda attached to it, and he has taken good care of himself. He's a businessman. If NAFTA doesn't pass, his company, Alliance Carter Incorporated, run by his son, and his Alliance Free Trade Zone in Dallas, Texas, or excuse me, Fort Worth, Texas, is going to be king of the hill as far as Mexican exports and imports are concerned. If NAFTA does go through, for the same reason, H. Ross Perot is going to have a larger than normal share of the piece of pie. He's covered himself on both ends. It doesn't matter to him whether he wins or loses. And he was always for NAFTA, just as Vice President Gore made the point tonight on the debate, until he ran for president and got the feedback from the people that they didn't want a NAFTA. So he's covered himself on both ends, and it really doesn't make any difference to him or his family if NAFTA goes through or not. And all the time, he's collecting the political points with the common man, the worker, who will probably vote for him if he runs for president, and God help us all if he ever wins. You want to see the quickest emergence of the return of the Messiah, who was known as Hitler? Just elect H. Ross Perot to run this country, and you will see it real quick. Now, I'm not sticking up for Al Gore. Almost everything Al Gore said tonight was a lie, deception, or a half-truth. He's not concerned with anything except bringing socialism to the United States of America and fulfilling the agenda of the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. And that is, they must destroy the middle class. Free trade, according to Marx, creates conflict among the classes and brings the classes down to the lowest common denominator, which is the pay or the standard of living of the average citizen in Mexico. Remember that, and Mexico is controlled by Freemasons. And if you listen to Tom Valentine, you heard him one night explain to you how that works. One party is controlled by the York Rite, the other party is controlled by the Scottish Rite. Everyone thinks that they're warring against each other, and therefore the Masons couldn't possibly be in control or be a part of any conspiracy. Oh, no. But, you see, it doesn't matter which party wins. Freemasonry is always in control in Mexico. Tom Ballantyne was trying to use that as an example of how Freemasonry couldn't possibly be part of any conspiracy. And he didn't talk about Freemasonry in the United States. He used as an example Freemasonry in the country of Mexico. Because, you see, he's sworn to protect his brothers in the craft. Now, I'm going to read to you from my book, ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who have already read my book, listen carefully, because most people who read my book don't really understand everything that they've read. The book is 500 pages long and is chock full of so much information that sometimes you have to read one page over and over again to understand just what's on that one page, much less all the other pages in the book. I'm going to read to you about 2 1/4 pages from my book beginning on page 47, and this should give you a little better understanding of what is happening. An ideal industry may be symbolized electronically in various ways. The simplest way is to represent a demand by a voltage and a supply by a current. When this is done, the relationship between the two becomes what is called an admittance, which can result from 3 economic factors: 1, hindsight flow; 2, present flow; and 3, foresight flow. Foresight flow is the result of that property of living entities to cause energy or food to be stored for a period of low energy, that is, a winter season. It consists of demands made upon an economic system for that period of low energy, the winter season. In a production industry, it takes several forms, one of which is known as production stock or inventory. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure capital industry, is represented by capacitance, and the stock or resource is represented by a stored charge. Satisfaction of an industry demand suffers a lag because of the loading effect of inventory priorities. Present flow ideally involves no delays. It is, so to speak, input today for output today. A hand-to-mouth flow. In electronic symbology, this specific industry demand, a pure-use industry, is represented by a conductance, which is then a simple economic valve, a dissipative element. Hindsight flow is known as habit or inertia. In electronics, this phenomenon is the characteristic of an inductor, economic analog equals a pure-service industry, in which a current flow, an economic analog equals flow of money, it creates a magnetic field, economic analog equals active human population, which, if the current flow, or money flow, begins to diminish or collapse, war to maintain the current or flow of money and energy. Other large alternatives to war as economic inductors or economic flywheels are an open-ended social welfare program or, folks, an enormous but fruitful open-ended space program, such as one that would require defense against invasion from an external species. The problem with stabilizing the economic system is that there is too much demand on account of, 1, too much greed, and 2, too much population. This creates excessive economic inductance, which can only be balanced with economic capacitance. In other words, true resources are value, in effect, in goods or services. The social welfare program is nothing more than an open-ended credit balance system which creates a false capital industry to give non-productive people a roof over their heads and food in their stomachs. This can be useful, however, because the recipients become state property in return for the gift, a standing army for the elite. For he who pays the piper picks the tune. Those who get hooked on the economic drug must go to the elite for a fix. In this, the method of introducing large amounts of stabilizing capacitance is by borrowing on the future credit of the world. This is a fourth law of motion, onset, and consists of performing an action and leaving the system before the reflected reaction returns to the point of action, in other words, a delayed reaction. The means of surviving the reaction is by changing the system before the reaction can return. By this means, politicians become popular in their own time, and the public pays for it later. In fact, the measure of such a politician is the delay time. The same thing is achieved by a government by printing money beyond the limit of the gross national product, an economic process called inflation. Now remember that inflation is only the act of printing money in excess of gross national product. They could blame it on the price of widgets or oil, only because you, the sheeple, never knew the real cause. The real cause and the only cause of inflation is the printing of more money beyond the gross national product, or making more credit available where money does not exist. This puts a large quantity of money into the hands of the public and maintains a balance against their greed. It creates a false self-confidence in them and for a while stays the wolf from the door. They must eventually resort to war to balance the account because war ultimately is merely the act of destroying the creditor, and the politicians are the publicly hired hitmen that justify the act to keep the responsibility and blood off the public conscience. If the people really cared about their fellow man, they would control their appetites, greed, procreation, etc., so that they would not have to operate on a credit or welfare social system which steals from the worker to satisfy the bum. Since most of the general public will not exercise restraint, there are only two alternatives to reduce the economic inductance of the system. Number one, listen closely. Number one, let the populace bludgeon each other to death in war, which will only result in a total destruction, eventually, of the living earth. Number two, take control of the world by the use of economic silent weapons in a form of quiet warfare and reduce the economic inductance of the world to a safe level by a process of benevolent slavery and genocide. The latter option has been taken as the obviously better option. At this point, it should be crystal clear to the reader why absolute secrecy about the silent weapons is necessary. The general public refuses to improve its own mentality and its faith in its fellow man. It has become a herd of proliferating barbarians and, so to speak, a blight upon the face of the earth, if you will, sheeple. They do not care enough about economic science to learn why they have not been able to avoid war despite religious morality, and their religious or self-gratifying refusal to deal with earthly problems renders the solution of the earthly problem unreachable by them. It is left to those few who are truly willing to think and survive as the fittest to survive, to solve the problem for themselves as the few who really care. Otherwise, exposure of the silent weapon would destroy our only hope of preserving the seed of future true humanity. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope this shocks you. It should shock you. You see, that's only 2 1/4 pages from my book, ladies and gentlemen, and it's right in the beginning. Right in the beginning. Experience, folks, and this is from page 56, experience has proven that the simplest method of securing a silent weapon and gaining control of the public is to keep the public undisciplined and ignorant of basic systems principles on the one hand, while keeping them confused, disorganized, and distracted with matters of no real importance on the other hand. This is achieved by, number one, disengaging their minds, sabotaging their mental activities, providing a low-quality program of public education in mathematics, logic, systems, design, and economics, and discouraging technical creativity. Number two, engaging their emotions, increasing their self-indulgence and their indulgence in emotional and physical activities by A, unrelenting emotional affrontations and attacks, mental and emotional rape by way of constant barrage of sex, violence, and wars in the media, especially the TV and the newspapers. B, giving them what they desire in excess, junk food for thought, and depriving them of what they really need. 3, rewriting history and law and subjecting the public to the deviant creation, thus being able to shift their thinking from personal needs to highly fabricated outside priorities. These preclude their interest in and discovery of the silent weapons of social automation technology. The general rule is that there is profit in confusion. The more confusion, the more profit. Therefore, the best approach is to create problems and then offer the solutions. The diversion summary is this. With the media, keep the adult public attention diverted away from the real social issues and captivated by matters of no real importance. In schools, keep the young public ignorant of real mathematics, real economics, real law, and real history. In the field of entertainment, keep the public entertainment below a sixth grade level. All you Wheel of Fortune wizards out there should appreciate that. And in the workplace, keep the public busy, 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 with no time to think. Back on the farm with the other animals. A silent weapons system operates upon data obtained from a docile public by legal but not always lawful force. Much information is made available to silent weapons systems programmers through the Internal Revenue Service. See studies in the structure of the American economy for an IRS source list. This information consists of the enforced delivery of well-organized data contained in federal and state tax forms collected, assembled, and submitted by slave labor provided by taxpayers and employers, and today you have tens of thousands of volunteers helping them collect your information for you. Furthermore, the number of such forms submitted to the IRS is a useful indicator of public consent, an important factor in strategic decision-making. Other data sources are given in the short list of inputs. Consent coefficients, numerical feedback indicating victory status, psychological basis when the government is able to collect tax and seize private property without just compensation, it is an indication that the public is ripe for surrender and is consenting to enslavement and legal encroachment. A good and easily quantified indicator of harvest time is the number of public citizens who pay income tax despite an obvious lack of reciprocal or honest service from the government or a legal basis for even doing so. The next step in the process of designing an economic amplifier is discovering the energy sources. The energy sources which support any primitive economic system are, of course, a supply of raw materials and the consent of the people to labor and consequently assume a certain rank, position, level, or class in the social structure, in effect, to provide labor at various levels in the pecking order. Each class is guaranteeing its own level of income, controls the class immediately below it, hence preserves the class structure. This provides stability and security, but also government from the top. As time goes on and communication and education improve, the lower class elements of the social labor structure become knowledgeable and envious of the good things that the upper class members have. They also begin to attain a knowledge of energy systems and the ability to enforce their rise through the class structure. This threatens the sovereignty of the elite. If this rise of the lower classes can be postponed long enough, the elite can achieve energy dominance, and labor by consent no longer will hold a position. Until such energy dominance is absolutely established, the consent of people to labor and let others handle their affairs must be taken into consideration, since failure to do so could cause the people to interfere in the final transfer of energy sources to the control of the elite. It is essential to recognize that at this time, public consent is still an essential key to the release of energy in the process of economic amplification. Therefore, consent as an energy release mechanism will now be considered. From the time a person leaves its mother's womb, its every effort is directed toward building, maintaining, and withdrawing into artificial wombs. Various sorts of substitute protective devices are shells. The objective of these artificial wombs is to provide a stable environment for both stable and unstable activity, to provide a shelter for the evolutionary processes of growth and maturity, in effect, survival, to provide security for freedom, and to provide defensive protection for offensive activity. This is equally true of both the general public and the elite. However, there is a definite difference in the way each of these classes go about the solution of problems. The primary reason why the individual citizens of a country create a political structure is a subconscious wish or desire to perpetuate their own dependency relationship of childhood. Simply put, they want a human god to eliminate all risk from their life, pat them on the head, kiss their bruises, put a chicken on every dinner table, clothe their bodies, tuck them into bed at night, and tell them that everything will be all right. That everything will be all right when they wake up in the morning. This public demand is incredible. So the human god, the politician, meets incredibility with incredibility by promising the world and delivering nothing. So, ladies and gentlemen, who is the bigger liar? The public or the Godfather? This public behavior is surrender born of fear, laziness, and expediency. It is the basis of the welfare state as a strategic weapon useful against a disgusting, and I'll say that again, against a disgusting public. Most people want to be able to subdue and or kill other human beings which disturb their daily lives, but they do not want to have to cope with the moral and religious issues which such an overt act on their part might raise. Therefore, they assign the dirty work to others, including their own children. Remember when you patted your children off and sent them to the Gulf to fight a war which had nothing to do with the United States of America? And so you kept the blood off of your own hands. They rave about the humane treatment of animals and then sit down to a delicious hamburger from a whitewashed slaughterhouse down the street and out of sight. But even more hypocritical, they pay taxes to finance a professional association of hitmen collectively called politicians and then complain about corruption in government. Again, most people want to be free to do things, to explore, etc., but they are afraid to fail. The fear of failure is manifested in irresponsibility, and especially in delegating those personal responsibility to others where success is uncertain or carries possible or created liabilities in law which the person is not prepared to accept. They want authority. The root word is author, but they will not accept responsibility or liability, so they hire politicians to face reality for them. Wake up, sheeple. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you that I will be in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Chambly Civic Center, November the 14th, 1993. That is this Sunday. This Sunday. If you think what you just heard was significant, you better be in Atlanta, Georgia. You will get an education like you've never had before in your life. I guarantee it. Now, the excerpts that I read are from my book, Behold a Pale Horse. I only read you about 4 pages, folks. 4 pages out of this book is more than you've ever learned in your entire life about the situation that we are in. Just think what the other 498 or 96 pages contain. If you'd like to order this book, send $30, if you're not a CAGI member, $30 to P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. That's to William Cooper, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, spelled S-H-O-W-L-O-W, Arizona, 85901. That's $30 postpaid, $25 postpaid for CAGI members. I don't think there's any CAGI members who have not read my book already some 3 or 4 times. And I'm not exaggerating. If you pick this book up before you go to bed, you will not sleep the night that you attempt to read this book and then go to bed. It just will not happen, folks. You will not be able to put it down. You will not be able to sleep. And some people have not slept for a couple, 3 days until they finished this book, or dropped right out of a chair, unconscious. So, get it. Read it. It is your survival manual. It will open the doors for you. It puts all the pieces of the puzzle together. It is the culmination of all of the study and research in my life and all of my experience in the military and attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence, where I found the information that began my search. Now, I want you to do something else. You don't just need a survival manual. You also need some economic security. And there's only one place that I recommend that you get that right now, aside from buying GCI, which you must do in order that we regain control of the propaganda machine that's being used against us as a silent weapon in this quiet war, and we are at war, by GCI. Also, call Swiss America Trading. Tell them you want to talk only to Gene Miller. Gene Miller. Mention my name, William Cooper. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. And then engage yourself in a very serious conversation about the assets you have and about their suggestions for means to protect those assets. Don't let everything you've worked for all your life slip through your fingers in what is coming shortly down the pike. For you see, ladies and gentlemen, I just read to you the reasons for all of this, all of this. And it is coming. I guarantee it. I don't have anything to do with bringing it about. I'm trying everything that I know to stop it. But you see, there are just too many sheeple out there. We are going to turn it around. We're going to make a better world. We're going to purchase Gannett Company Incorporated. We're going to educate as much of the public as we possibly can. And they are not going to succeed in all of their efforts. We will change the future for the better. So buy GCI. Call Gene Miller at Swiss America Trading. Do that now. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Once again, folks, 1-800-289-2646. If you're outside the continental limits of the United States of America, the number is 602-953-6000. That's 602-953-6000. Once again, I will be in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend, folks, Sunday, November the 14th, at the Chambly Civic Center. For information, call area code 404 986 404-986-0802. That's 404-986-0802. And there's only one other thing you need besides that. That's a place to grow food, a roof over your head, and at least 2 years food storage for every member of your household. If you'd like information on that, send us a large manila type clasp envelope, self-addressed and stamped, and we'll be happy to send it to you. For those of you who have already sent your envelopes, we have just received our information from the manufacturer, and we'll be sending out your information to you very shortly. All listeners to this broadcast get an immediate and automatic 10% discount on stored food. All CAGI members get a 20% discount right off the top, the retail prices that everyone else in this country has to pay.
In the land of cotton, old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born. Look away, Dixieland. Oh, I wish I was in Dixie, away, away, 'cause in Dixieland I'll take my stand to live and die.
Phones are open, folks, 602-333-2174, but first I want to read you my creed. I keep getting phone calls and letters saying, who are you? What do you believe in? And this is page 3 in my book. I have declared it publicly for all time and for history. I believe, first, in God, the same God in which my ancestors believed. I believe in Jesus Christ and that He is my Savior. Second, I believe in the Constitution of the Republic of the United States of America without interpretation as it was written and meant to work. I have given my sacred oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I intend to fulfill that oath. Third, I believe in the family unit and in particular my family unit. I have sworn that I will give my life if it is required in defense of God, the Constitution, or my family. Fourth, I believe that any man without principles that he is ready and willing to die for at any given moment is already dead and is of no use or consequence whatsoever. Good evening, you're on the air. Well, it looks like he took a jump. Phone lines are open, folks, and Carolyn's here in studio. 602-333-2174. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I read that you said your book was banned by the government.
No, I never said my book was banned by the government.
In Flipside magazine, it says right in there.
No, it doesn't.
You did 3 articles for them. I have it right in front of me.
I have the articles, too. I never said the government banned my book.
You said they banned your book.
No, I said...
Did the person at the book that told you your book was banned?
That's exactly right. Now you're getting your head back between your ears, you idiot. Go back and read the article and then call again when you can think. What I said was I went into a bookstore in Atlanta after I was told by people who live in Atlanta that my book had been banned. I went in and asked for my book, and the person behind the counter said my book had been banned. I asked by who. She said she didn't know. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think the other way, or another way in which basically trying to keep control over development and destruction of the whole earth just due to this greed of peoples is the belief in the 6,000 year cycle. And this is the thing that the cell group, which you had quoted a few days ago, believes in, and that when you have a very nearly a destruction of the whole society every 6,000 years, and as soon as the society builds itself up to about the point that we are right now, then we have a catastrophe, and only those who are prepared survive well enough to build a new world order.
The new root race emerges.
Right. I'm not sure exactly what the root race means, but those who are sufficiently prepared are the ones that are ready to organize the next cycle.
That's exactly right. That's what the Stell Group teaches, and the calendar of the Mystery Schools is exactly 6,000 years long. And in his book, Tom Valentine stated that in the Great Pyramid at Cheops, he had discovered that there was a 6,000-year prophecy from the time that the pyramids were built into the pyramids, which he claimed to be able to read. And they believe that on May 5th in the year 2000, is it 2000?
Yes, that's right.
That the world as we know it will come to an end, that there will be earth changes, and California will fall into the sea, and volcanoes will erupt, and the land will come up out of the ocean, and the dry land will sink under the ocean, and the poles will shift, and all of this stuff. We've looked into this. There's absolutely, and I mean this, there's absolutely no scientific basis for any of it.
Well, the theory was that the gravitational forces due to the other planets would cause a torque on the Earth's crust, but there's not that much torque, and the fact is the planets are organized in such a way that you have some on one side of the Earth and some on the other, so... Like I had said before, I just don't think there's much scientific basis.
No, there's not. You're absolutely right. And not only that, but just a few years ago, we experienced the potentially most destructive planetary alignment that there could be, all planets lined up on one side of the Earth, and nothing happened.
Well, I'm not really sure if that, at that point, if there was any more gravitational force due to the planets than we will be getting in the year 2000, but... The fact is that those forces are so tiny that most astronomers just kind of said, oh, it's just of no significance at all in either event.
You're right.
Now, I was looking, though, in this Stell letter, which you had quoted a couple of days ago, and I thought it might be worthwhile quoting down a bit farther in this and see what comments you would have on that. This is the... May 79 issue, which you had quoted some from.
Uh-huh.
And continuing this, he says that the Brotherhood's program for teaching mankind is a two-pronged approach. First, science and technology are important in order for mankind to be able to meet its need for food, clothing, housing, energy, and medical care. And secondly, a philosophy based on ultimate truth is important so man may live in a state of freedom, justice, economic balance, and the real happiness that comes from understanding man's relationship to the universe while living in accordance with his inner human nature. The Brotherhoods find it absolutely essential that you take charge of your own life and become thoroughly aware that you are responsible for everything that happens to you. You must not surrender your self-determination to spirit entities, to mediumship, or eschew self-government by allowing bureaucrats, dictators, or gurus to have power over you. Your egotic growth depends upon you having the freedom to decide your fate and to experience directly the consequences of your own decisions and efforts. Your critical analysis must be applied to everything you encounter.
Okay. That's the mystery school line. That's what the people in the bottom of the pyramid are told. As you go up through the ranks in the ladder, though, you find out that that is not what is happening.
In the case of the Stell Group, they're relying on the people in the bottom of the pyramid to provide the moving force that makes it all possible.
Then why are they in the process of enslaving humanity?
I, you know, all I can tell you is that...
I call that the telltale pause.
Well, all I can really tell you is that from the standpoint of the Stell Group, the time frame, they have to get this whole thing put together by the year 2000.
Now that's what they're all working
and,
for. But in the year 2000, it will be a one-world totalitarian socialist government where the common man is enslaved. No one will be free. They like to talk about freedom, liberty, fraternity, equality. But every time they come to power, that is not what happens.
I'm not sure, though, if you can group all of these into one.
Oh, yes. At the highest level, they are all known collectively as the Illuminati. Those who are illumined, the bearers of the light. The light of what? The light of the sun, the light, Lucifer. They believe in the Luciferian philosophy.
I know that you take all of this from the ancient religions of Babylon.
No, I take that directly from the mouth of the man who founded the Stell Group.
Well,
he stated publicly and wrote that he was revealing that the god of the Stell Group and of the Brotherhood is Lucifer.
Where can you find that kind of reference? It just sounds alien to everything that I've read about the Stell Group.
As I've said many times on this program, if you're at the bottom of this pyramidal structure of organization...
If that's what you get.
That's what you get, yeah. You can get that from a book called The New World Order by A. Ralph Epperson, which you can get at any reputable bookstore, or you can order it from Publius Press in Tucson, Arizona. I don't have the number right here, but you can call the Tucson or the Arizona operator and ask for Publius Press in Tucson and talk to Ralph about his book.
Okay, well, I think that's the only thing I had about this. I was thinking, though, that if we look at religions which go pre-Babylonian, that we see, you know, religions which have not gone through the through Babylon. For example, the religions in, say, the North American Indians or the Australian Aborigines, which believe in a non-centralized authority. They practice a non-centralized authority, and they believe in not exploiting the earth just because
they live according to the laws of nature is what it's called.
Right.
Yeah. I've got to let you go. You've been on much longer than you should be, but I kept you on because you had some good things to say and some good comments and questions, and I think this conversation was very worthwhile. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
602-333-2174. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello, Bill Cooper.
Hello.
Hey, this is Billy Goodman.
Hi, Billy. How are you?
I'm doing fine, my friend. How about yourself?
Good.
It's a little strange me calling you live on the air, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Going back a number of years, you were calling me on my radio program.
That's true.
Anyway, I thought I would just call and say hello to you, and I understand that there was a little birthday party going on last night.
Yeah, it was Annie's birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday to Annie.
Thank you.
And also, I could tell your listening audience, I don't know if they're aware of this or not, but I'm on... every night, immediately following you on another frequency on the same radio station, which is very strange when it comes to shortwave radio. I don't really understand how that works yet. But for the same company, basically, number one. And number two, you have the same sponsor as I have.
That's correct.
So I thought I would just tell the folks that when they, you know, when you're off and you say goodnight to everybody, maybe I'd like to come on over and join me at 5.810. I think we kind of carry the same theme or very similar to it.
I thought you were on 7435.
I'm sorry. I get so confused. I was on the 5.810. I get, believe me, I've gone through a lot of different frequencies. I feel like I'm full of frequencies. You're right. It's 7435. And one more thing I would like to do, Bill Cooper, because I know how difficult it is to tell the people who you really are, where you come from, what your background really is. You can do it in your book and all that, but I would like to invite you on as a guest on my happening. One night next week. Like when you're done with your program, you call me or I'll call you and we'll let the people know who Bill Cooper is.
Great. Love to
do
that.
Sure. All right. I have my calendar in front of me. Do you have your calendar?
Yeah.
Now tell the truth. On your calendar, what picture do you have?
It's just the number one.
Oh, okay. I have a horse.
I won't be back in town, Billy, until probably the 18th.
The 18th
of November, yeah.
How about if we put you on, because I know you're off Sunday night.
Yeah.
Would you like to come on Sunday night? Because I'm on Sunday night.
Sure. That'd be great.
We'll put Bill Cooper on as our guest, thinking right here on the 21st. And you and I will talk between now and then.
Okay.
As far as time and calling and whatever we're going to do. And the audience can get to really know who Bill Cooper is. Everybody listening to you right now can come on over to 7.435. By the way, folks, that happens at the exact same time listening to Bill Cooper right now. On Sunday nights, I come on an hour earlier. So it'll be the exact same time listening to Bill Cooper right now all over the world, whatever you may be. I got confused with the time area. So about you, so. Anyway, I just thought I would call in and do that and just tell the folks a little bit about me being available after you, before they go to bed at night. I'd like to have them hear what I have to say. I'm really getting into one of the main topics I'm dealing with, Bill, is the IRS.
Oh, good.
One of your favorites, right?
It sure is.
I mean, I've got to figure out how it is they've been getting rid of this all these years. I don't know if you ever heard the man named Irwin Schiff. He's written a book called The Federal Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And he stops by every once in a while, calls in to tell us he's going to jail and everything else for what he believes to be true. And the information that we're getting, and we keep checking it out, that there is no requirement to pay income tax.
That's correct.
By the way, I got to ask you this straight up. Do you pay your income tax?
I do not file. I do not pay. I pay all legal taxes that I am required to pay and nothing more.
Uh-huh. So how many years has that been?
It's been quite a few.
Well, when they come and get us, they'll get us all if they ever do. But the point is, we got to fight for our rights because there's no proof anywhere in the world where it says we should do that. Anyway, I'll let you go back and do what you're doing, and I thank you for the opportunity of letting me talk, and I look forward to interviewing you the 21st of Sunday night on the Billy Goodman Happening.
Great.
And the rest of you folks out there listening, when Bill signs off tonight, come on over and talk to me at 7.435. Good night, Bill.
Good night, Billy.
Thank you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Good night. The number is 602-333-2174. Billy Goodman's always welcome here. He's one of the few men in radio who will give anybody a chance to tell their story. And in the early days when I was struggling to get what I knew out into the world, he gave me more hours than I dare to count. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, listen. I was up in Las Vegas this last weekend.
And you saw the Luxor.
And I saw the Luxor.
And you saw the phallus, the penis of Osiris.
Yes.
You saw it all, right?
But I saw something interesting.
Yes.
Okay, I was in the upper section, and they have like three, I guess, their theaters, which I didn't go in. And one is, I guess they show like a movie in each one of them. And one is of the past, and I guess the one shows, I guess, of the present, and then one shows of the future.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's the one you want to see, by the way.
Now, listen. In the front of the, yeah, in the entrance of it, where the future one is this huge, huge black, almost like a granite black face in front of it. And then there was a huge symbol. And it was a symbol of the world. And the world was spread out as a flat map in the center of this symbol. And around the symbol, it said Society for Global Transformation.
Uh-huh.
And that was written around this large symbol in this doorway. Now, do you know anything about that?
Well,
I'll
tell you what you were participating in there. The Luxor was built as a temple of initiation for the sheeple into the New World Order as they passed through Las Vegas in their quest to satisfy their greed.
Uh-huh. Well, hey, they got a really good cafe in there.
Bet they do. I bet they got really good everything in there.
I mean, they have a little river that goes around in the inside, you know, and they have a boat, you know, and people...
You know what that is? It's the River Styx.
Uh-huh. And that goes all the way around, I guess, the interior perimeter of it.
Uh-huh.
And the whole center is wide open, and when you stand in the center, you can actually look up to the apex.
Uh-huh. And see the light.
Yeah. Well, you can't see the light from the inside.
You mean they don't have a big light up there in the center?
Not in the inside, but on the outside, the whole apex is like a gigantic reflector. And
uh-huh.
I heard that the astronauts saw it from outer space. And you can also, I guess I heard you can see that light in Los Angeles from there.
Yeah.
But the whole apex is an actual reflector.
The New World Order is ushering in the new dawn of the new root race of the New World Order.
Uh-huh.
You can see this on Bill Griffith's business cards. Bill Griffith is with the Constitution Foundational Association. On his business card, it says, "A New Dawn for Texas Corrections." Then it has a picture of the state of Texas with the rising sun over the panhandle.
But I was just curious what that society, that symbol, have you ever heard of that, the Society for Global...
Yeah. It's to transform people into accepting their servitude in the New World Order.
That's what I struck, you know, that's what kind of struck me. I've never seen that before, but it's a huge, like I say, a huge symbol in that doorway as you go into the theater of the future.
Yeah, it's an organization, and guess what? We're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
And folks, remember the first half of this program. Order my book, Behold a Pale Horse, William Cooper, P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. It's $30 postpaid, $25 for CAGI members postpaid. It'll be one of the best investments you ever made, and it's the only book in the world that's guaranteed. If you get it, you look through it, it's not anything you can learn from, send it right back and I'll refund your money, no questions asked, but it must be in brand new condition exactly as you received it. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
God is God.